Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 510, Last Encounter of the Protostar.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And we're here for the last half of the last season of Prodigy.
Yeah, we're, what, 5 episodes away from the end?
5 for us, like 10 episodes of the show, but we're pairing them
yeah.
up. So after this, we got 4 more pairs of episodes. That's it. So.
All right.
Yep. And it does feel like things are moving along, kind of, but I would definitely say this pair of episodes could have been the first act of something else.
These 2 episodes could have been an email.
Yeah, like, there's some okay character stuff in here, but for the most part, plot-wise, almost nothing happens.
Well, I mean, we spend a lot of time...
Yeah?
We spend a lot of time with Chakotay, and I'm like, I like most of this cast better than him.
And when, like, this podcast, you know, we're on episode 510, when have we ever cared about Chakotay? Like, not once,
never.
Right? Yeah. I think going into Voyager, we were like, okay, I made that little song. I'm keeping an open mind. Like, I can't hate him out of the gate, but it didn't take him long.
It did not take long at all for just, I don't care about what this guy's deal is. What are you talking about?
And years ago, we were insensitive about, like, the Native American aspect of
him. Oh, yeah.
But I will say, what we were really criticizing, I realize in retrospect, is white writers trying to approximate that and doing a bad job and us making fun of that.
Yep.
It was way more the clumsy, like, no, let me tell you about my people from people who have never experienced anything like that.
Yes. And also the fact that he can't act.
Well, there is that. That is a whole separate issue. All right.
Or at least
let's get into it.
Like, I guess he can read lines.
I mean, anybody can read lines.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and speaking of that, why don't I read some lines to you?
Read some good lines.
Nobody said good. I'm not promising good. But, as is our custom, this is one of those two-parters, so we're just going to summarize the whole thing and then talk about the whole thing. So, here we go. The usual gang of idiots, plus Majel, emerge from Wesley Crusher's stupid time hole to find themselves on a barren alien world where Chakotay has chosen to mope for an entire decade. I spend a lot of time trying to work out if hanging out with Chuck is an upgrade or a downgrade from hanging out with Wesley, and honestly, I'm still not sure. I will say this, though. If my parents had made me go live with Uncle Chuck, who lives in a rusted-out old boat and whose only friend is a computer program, I'd definitely feel like I was being punished, not rewarded. After freeing them from the classic giant Ewok-style net trap that he had set, Chuck grumbles his way back to the Protostar to play with the Franklin Mint Star Trek chess set that he whittled for himself, leaving the kids to fend for themselves in the aforementioned barren alien world. Until the aforementioned computer program friend, Hologram Janeway, who hasn't sacrificed herself yet because time travel, talks him into not letting them die out there. Then we pay tribute to that classic bit of Star Trekery that goes back to at least Spock's brain. Someone doesn't want to do something, and someone else spends massive amounts of screen time saying, oh, come on, over and over again. While this is happening, the more useful members of the junior crew, so everyone except Al, work on repairing the Protostar and its various accessories. See, upon discovering the stupid evil red ball that the Diviner planted on the Protostar, Chuck thought the most sensible thing would be to bring the ship to a barely habitable wasteland and sit there until he died. But then that bird guy he came here with was convinced there was a better way, which makes sense because seriously, there must be 100 better ways than this one. And bird guy got really close to working this out, climbing to the top of a dangerous lightning mountain where antimatter literally grows on trees. Hey, infinite universe, why not? He managed to cram some of that antimatter into those little tubes you get at bank drive-thrus. Do banks still have those? Then buried the tubes under his skeleton. So it's actually a good thing that Dal wandered up here with no regard for anything, because now Chakotay has a way off the planet that he swore not to leave. I can't say that this entirely makes sense to me, but the important thing is that part one is over. Take it away, Maggie.
So, with Chakotay temporarily out of his stupid bad mood, and a tank of antimatter merrily humming in their pockets, the Protostar crew begin their plan of turning their ship into a proto swim, a boat. They're making it into a boat. This involves a lot of hauling wood, installing sails, making sure the replicator has plenty of grog, you know, boat stuff. Meanwhile, Admiral Janeway is wondering what to make of this Wesley Crusher guy and reaches out to the only impartial opinion in Starfleet, his mommy. Yes, it's a brief appearance by Animated Bever. Child Jack Crusher is not there. I assume he's off eating a banger and or mash. Mm-hmm. So, Bever, what's the deal with this Wesley kid? He cool? Janeway asks. Oh, my Wesley has never done anything wrong in his entire life, Bever replies. Really? Janeway asks. I heard he killed a guy. Oh, no, says Bever. No one remembers that. Back on the Protostar, that's better. I knew I could find one. The kids prepare to cast off and sail to some kind of whirlpool that'll launch them into space. Unfortunately, the weather starts getting rough, the tiny ship is tossed, and if not for the courage of her stupid crew, the Protostar will be lost. Chuck is washed away and almost eaten by eels, and Dal dives in after him. Wait, I yell at the TV. Take Murph with you. Get rid of all the characters I hate at once. Mm-hmm. Also, alas, Dal saves Chuck with his use of rope, and the Protostar once again launches into space. With that done, they just need to go find an experimental baby star to get back to Voyager. And how hard can that possibly be?
I'm just going to jump right into my good thing, which is Bodo Star.
That Thank is excellent. You.
Good job. Yep. Very good. Also, major points for making a Gilligan's Island reference to something related to Voyager, something that became tired immediately after Voyager premiered, and yet you made it funny again.
Yep. That was, I distinctly remember that from when Voyager came out, like a lot of, it might not have been, even might have been reading the same magazine, but like.
Yeah. No, all the news groups were like that. The AOL chat rooms were doing it. Everyone's making that dumb joke.
Yeah. Every week they don't get home because Gilligan kicked the fucking warp drive into the transporter.
A coconut. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Hilarious. So Gilligan would have been Neelix, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe Gilligan was the ship's chef.
The ship's fool.
That's not true. They made the women cook.
Yeah, that's true. I had a note here as we're going, like, oh, okay, we've gotten Wesley now. I wonder if any other Trek characters are going to show up who are actually cool. And then Bever showed up. Like, that's not what I meant.
I didn't know. I would have been fine if Bever showed up if it weren't just to talk about how good her boy is.
Like, every now and then I'm like, were we unfair, like, to say that all she ever talks about are her children? And no, they brought her back in Picard to talk about her other child. And
her
now
new
they come
child.
Back to this. Yeah. And now they come back to this and she's still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't had a boy to talk about since Wesley disappeared. I needed to get a new boy.
And you were correct to point out that Jack, like, because of the timeline here, like, Jack is around, but he's probably not old enough to, you know, like,
matter.
She's actively hiding him from Picard right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's dreaming about doors.
No, at one point, Jane was like, so how is Captain Picard? And Bever's like, I haven't talked to him in a dog's age, a boy's age.
Question. Oh, going through a tunnel. Hey, you can't use that trick on me. I just used that
I
trick
invented
on the Admiral.
That trick.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, Janeway and Bever should know each other, and it's just because they're women around the same age. That's it. There's no other reason other than, I don't know, they feel like they'd be friends.
Yeah, no, they should have like a book club or something.
Well, I'm sure we've talked about that before, because I think, yeah, we must have recently, because we also said that Carol Freeman should be in that book club.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, the type of ladies of a certain age that read 50 Shades of Grey and think it's actually, like, kinky and shocking.
Yeah. And have a box of wine.
Of course. Replicator, wine. No, not like that.
No, I wanted a box.
Mm-hmm. You got to teach the replicator. Like people have said, well, no, box wine is a convenience, but you can replicate it in its purest form. No, I want it in a box.
Like, you can get any kind of wine you want. Like, you know, you get a Chateau Picard. No. Thank you.
Definitely not that. Yeah.
Absolutely not. I would like to keep these friends.
Tastes like feet.
Freeman's like, I get a bottle of this every year. I don't even know Captain Picard.
No, this is from my daughter.
You got Captain Picard's wine? Give me that.
Mm-hmm. So, like I said, not a lot happens in these two episodes. Like some.
Not really.
But the first episode is entirely convincing Chuck, and the second episode is all sea adventure. And I, again, feel like you could have told all this in one episode or even half an episode.
Oh, absolutely. It feels like they just like, well, we got Chakotay now after all this time of looking for him. We might as well spend as much time with him as possible. And that brings me to my bad thing.
Okay.
Chakotay has found a way to be both boring and a jerk by leaving children outside to be eaten by sandworms. But Maggie, you may be asking, Chakotay's been marooned on this planet for 10 years. Surely he's entitled to a brief bad mood when visitors come calling. No, I reply.
Yeah.
Also, Rock spent a literal eternity alone on a spaceship and still kept her chipper attitude. I don't know what his excuse is.
Yep, I had the exact note. Like, oh, 10 years? How terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Just, but also, I was thinking about it himself.
Yeah. Like, the fact the bird guy was like, hang on, I have a plan. I bet I can do this. And Chakotay is just like, no, what if instead of that, we did nothing? Like,
no. And then I called this out in my summary, but like, then he's like, oh, he found a way to escape. I better do that. Like, what changed, man? I guess it's because he believes the kids, but it's still doesn't really work for me.
There is an aspect to at least this version of Chakotay that feels very much like I am absolutely getting off on the fact that I'm stuck here and my entire personality is going to be being mad about it. Every day, I'm going to get up, do shit I don't want, eat fish, lick a fish I don't want, and be mad about it.
Oh, fish and crunch berries.
Yep, and that's going to be it. And I'm going to get a real smug sense of self-satisfaction that I have to do this every day.
And if everything goes to my plan, I will never be able to convey this smug sense of satisfaction to anyone because I'm here by myself.
No, it's just for me. And the fake version of the girl I have a crush on.
Oh, boy. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So... also, it occurs to me, just the first idea out of my head, and I bet if you and I sat and thought this through, we could come up with dozens of others. But I appreciate he's trying to keep the Protostar out of commission. Like, it's got a weapon in it, you can't. But what if he just blew it up on this planet and called for help and got Starfleet to take him away?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't have to stay here.
No, but that's just, like, it feels like, no, I have to do this.
Why?
Because of honor or something.
But I mean, you're right that this is the whole personality, and it always has been. He's the he's the survivalist guy. He's the guy who, you know, like let's put aside the problematic aspect of the only main Native American character in the history of Star Trek. Like we had that one off in an animated episode, but that's about it.
Yes.
Is a back to nature survivalist, can live off the land. Like that's a little like if you had a few of them and he was one, that's fine. But he's carrying a lot on his shoulders and he's like, oh, the land speaks to me. Okay, don't please don't. But
don't
in any case,
this.
Let's just like I think at one point I think a listener had suggested, what if you replace Chakotay with Ron Swanson? And that's that stuck with me because like. Yeah, that's kind of the type of person he is. Like, let's take the culture part of it out for a minute. And like, he just wants to live off the land. I'm like, okay, now you get to do your little Johnny Appleseed role play. That's fine. But you could go home and do this and also live better. You know, like you could live off land that gives you more than crunch berries and fish for the rest of your life.
Yeah. But it's like, no, it feels like it's got to be that, no, I have to suffer.
Why?
I don't know, but I know people like that exist. I've met people like that.
I have been that person from time to time, mm-hmm. but I also,
me too.
When I recognize it, say, hey, knock it off. Snap out of it.
Yeah.
You need therapy or medication or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which he could use all of those things.
He could definitely use therapy. Like,
oh, absolutely. Well,
7 years in the Delta
Hologram
Quadrant,
Janeway's
dude.
Giving him that.
Yeah.
He thinks he's getting therapy from Hologram Janeway, which is, look, this is your good thing.
Oh, yeah. I was delighted to have Hologram Janeway back again. And despite never having met these kids ever before, she instantly falls back into, okay, kids, let me tell you how to help out.
Yeah, it was cool.
You seem
and
cool.
I'm glad she's around and she's the voice of reason when Chuck's being mm-hmm. particularly stupid. But also, I don't know, if we're going to get her back, I would have liked the version that knew them, that had history with them, you know?
The thing is, I like that she doesn't know them, but they know her. Like, they're so excited yeah. to see her. And she's like, oh, okay, well, this is nice, I suppose.
And she believes them.
Mm-hmm.
They're like time worms are coming to get us. And Chakotay's like, time worms? And Hologram Janeway says, Chuck, are you kidding me? How many, like, mm-hmm. how many times a week did we see time worms in the Delta Quadrant?
All we ever did was meet time worms at some form or another.
All I am is a computer with, like, a spreadsheet of shit that Janeway's seen, and I know this is real.
I literally thought, all I am is a computer with an IQ the size of a planet.
Mm-hmm. Which, no, she's got the IQ of 200 PE teachers, obviously.
Mm-hmm. IQ of 6,000.
They're dead, Chuck. They're all dead, Chuck.
They're all
Everybody's
dead.
Everybody's dead, Chuck. Mm-hmm. My bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is more of a bad thing for the whole series, but these guys spend so much time rescuing Dal. Like
yep.
it's a major plot point in both episodes, at least once. I think mm-hmm. twice in one of them. Like, he wanders off and does what he wants, and then everyone has to divert their resources to going and getting him. And it's so tedious. But also, he's still crying about whatever he saw from his future,
yep.
that he's not going to be a captain. Like, you're not even good. Like, at one point, Chakotay's like, you're bad at boat, so you get to be on rope duty. You get to coil
yeah.
the ropes, which sounds like a punishment. And then later he's like, hey, I need those uncoiled ropes. And Dal's like, oh, mm-hmm. I didn't do that. Like, I gave you this duty not to punish you, but because it needed to be done. And yes, mm-hmm. it's not skilled labor, but it's still someone needed to do it. And you didn't even do that. Like,
there's only like seven of us.
The only way you can lead people with and be so incompetent is if your dad's rich. And that is not the case.
Yep. No.
So you got to get there the hard way, kid. Like, if he was a Nepo baby, then all
oh, sure.
of this would, I would hate it, but all of this would be kind of justified character-wise, mm-hmm. but, yeah.
It feels like we should be so far beyond this version of Dal at this point.
Well, and again, I've called this out a bunch of times, but it's a lot like what they did with Mariner and with Michael Burnham, which is,
yes,
they seem to have made some growth, and then next week, they haven't. Like, we're mm-hmm. in the era where everything's serialized now. It's not episodic shown out of order.
Yeah.
So you don't need to revert characters back to the way they used to be anymore. Like, in the 90s, I understood that because mm-hmm. reruns showed whatever order. You can't say, well, now the Doctor's like this. No, you have to kind of maintain that. I get that. But
although this is the only show that is actively trying to keep people from watching it. So honestly, it makes more sense than the other Star Treks.
I guess that's true. And I keep coming back to what Flonk said, which is season one was such a perfect introduction for kids. And this
mm-hmm.
is just not.
Insane.
Yeah.
Hey, let's spend more time with characters of a TV show that has been canceled for 20 years. Oh, boy.
Well, that doesn't bother me because a lot of modern Trek's doing that. And if you do it with characters I like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's the time aspect of it that like, I, one of the only two people who has reviewed this entire franchise in podcast mm-hmm. form, like, I'm having a hard time following the time logic of some of this. And a child, okay, kids are going to be more media savvy about certain things than I was as
sure.
a kid, absolutely. But I have a hard time believing that a kid of, say, 10 or 12, which I guess is the target audience, I would guess, is going to follow all this time travel stuff perfectly. It just that
it's,
doesn't
it's,
really
it is it is a lot. Like,
yeah,
you add in like space and like mind.
Yeah, none of that has ever made sense, and they had the opportunity to make it make sense, and they didn't do that.
Yeah.
What was your good thing?
Hologram Janeway. I already touched on this.
Oh, right. You're right.
Just
you're
happy
right.
to see her again. Hello.
Yep. My good thing is...
Guess who's back? You left me to die.
Mm-hmm. I'll never die. My good thing is this is a subtle moment, and there were a lot of good things. This wasn't one of those I'm struggling to find something. Like, it's just I particularly like this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Where the kids are trying to get the ship working and Chuck's still not on board. I mentioned this in my summary. Like, he's like, yeah, fine, do whatever. Keep me out of it. And like Jenkum's trying to fix the little dune buggy and
yep.
He's like, that's not gonna work. It's never worked. And like yeah, well, you haven't met Jenkum Pog before. Smash, mm-hmm. smash, works now.
You never tried hitting it with a hammer before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hit it with lots of hammers. Not in the wrong places.
Mm-hmm. So, like, he's, he's staying out of it. And he walks by a crew of them working on the ship, and Majel flashes him the Vulcan sign, the hand sign, and says, live long and prosper. And the animation on him is infinitely a better actor than his voice is.
Oh, 100%.
The look he shoot, like, the side eye and the half-hearted Vulcan salute, where, like, he doesn't say anything, but it sure reads as live long and leave me out of it. And it was just, it was perfect.
It's very
good. Yeah. I'm not going to disrespect your culture, but also fuck off.
Leave me alone. His model is real good. Like,
It is. Like, I still don't like the actor, but.
No, but animated Chuck looks real good with a beard.
He does. And we've
got a little bit of gray in there.
I've seen Robert Beltran. Like these days, and he actually, he's a good looking guy. Like,
oh, nice.
I think I mentioned this. Devlin suggested that Chuck just be the himbo bartender, and like, yeah, that fits.
Oh, yeah. That would be perfect.
Because he's kind of hunky. He's just dumb. Mm-hmm. Boring.
Hey, Chakotay, give me a whiskey, and listen, I got a problem I could use some advice on. Oh, you should talk to a therapist or something. I am not good at that, but I will make you a hell of a Manhattan.
So when I was with the Maquis, also, if I were writing this show, he talks about the Maquis a tiny bit, like just like talking to Dal, like, look, I took a chance where I thought this was the right political cause, blah, 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 blah. And I would have had any of the kids, but even Dal, the dumbest one, say, couldn't you have just found another planet?
Yeah, right. There's lots of planets.
Yeah. Even I know that, and I grew up in a mine.
There's lots of planets. I'm from, like, 20 of them.
Yeah?
Sort of.
Uh-huh. At one point...
The way Chuck talks about them, too... Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, please.
The way Chuck talks about it, too, is very much like, that was a dumb thing to do, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's looking back. He's like, it's 20 years later. Maybe I shouldn't have done that, actually.
But like, he talks about it like he was in a gang.
Yep. Well, he kind of was.
Like, listen, son, when I was your age, I joined the greasers from the book The Outsiders.
Turns the chair around.
Uh-huh. Look, I can be cool. I can be hip. I don't think you've ever been cool or hip.
Ducka, 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 ducka. There's a. Did you catch that? What that was?
Yeah.
I thought I was kind of out on a limb with that one. Okay.
No. I got it.
Okay. There is. I wish I had written down who said this because someone described Chuck as such a prickly feather.
That's funny.
Yep.
That's really like, funny. I didn't catch that. That's great.
I think it was Zero, because it sounds like something Zero would say, but they let the prick hang there for just a moment. And nothing funnier than a hanging prick.
Leaf feather.
Mm-hmm. Anticipation.
Superman's acting like a real different person.
Yeah. I did like, to get back to my good thing, I did like the whole montage of them continually trying to help and him hating it. Like,
yep.
It's basically the recycling episode of The Simpsons. Please, no. Just leave over me and alone. Over and over again. Please. No.
No.
What else?
Please.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got here?
At one point, Chuck says, why is the blobby guy here? And, you know, I've been asking that for 30 episodes now.
I agree.
Yep. Don't agree with much you have to say, but you're right on with that one. That one and keeping Hologram Janeway as your best pal. Those are two good choices.
Mm-hmm. I would absolutely do that as well. Morning, Maggie. Yep. Morning.
Okay.
Morning, Hologram Janeway.
But I don't want to get too into this, but he's fucking her, right?
That is none of my... Yeah, of course he is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but they're fictional characters who canonically have had sex, I think, once, or they lived on a planet together for a while.
At least once in the series, yeah.
Heavily implied that they hooked up for a while.
They definitely did in that episode where they thought they were going to live on that planet together. You remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, that's exactly what I was talking about, yeah.
And yeah, yeah.
Did they ever explicitly say they had sex? I mean, it's pretty obvious, but you could wiggle out of it if you wanted to, is my point.
It's the same way that, like, Picard and Bever definitely had sex during TNG, and Deanna and Bill were constantly having sex.
Oh, undoubtedly. Yeah, but that's, like, they were both horny. Like, that was not hard to figure out, you know.
There's a bit in, I was listening to a podcast, like a movie podcast review, Insurrection, and there's a line that Deanna says where she's like, I've never kissed you without a beard before. And I'm like, that's bullshit.
Yeah, because they were together when he was young.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Let's see, what else?
Chakotay has a cowboy hat now, which... I don't know where he got. I mean, I know where he got it. Replicators exist, but like,
sure.
He's just if I'm going to mope for the next 10 years.
The thing is, because I know what he looks like now, and it's pretty close to this animation model. I think he'd look good in a cowboy hat. It's the right like. He's got a rugged look. He's got a beard now, and he's a little bit of gray. And he looks, you know, weathered in a good way. And like, he'd probably look good in a cowboy hat. But it is a weird choice because have you ever worn that before?
I mean, I guess if you're out working in the sun all day, like, that's the point of a cowboy hat.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying canonically, like, is this character a cowboy hat guy, is what I'm saying.
It doesn't feel like it.
Nope.
And if he did the cowboy hat and, like, he had, like, a big pair of snakeskin boots or something, then I'd be like, yeah, okay, you're leaning into aesthetic now that you've gotten old. Like, you're reading a lot of, cowboy novels now.
Yep.
What's the guy's name? Louis L'Amour. You're reading a lot of Louis L'Amour novels now.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of... no, never mind. I'm pulling a bunch of half names that are definitely not correct.
Yeah. Guys ever read Lonesome Dove? It's the best.
Oh, God. When I worked at Blockbuster, like, a bunch of dads wanted that movie a lot.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was a miniseries. I don't know, but... I'm aware of the video version of it.
Yes. No, it's also a cowboy book, apparently.
Yeah, I know. Also, The Thorn Birds, I think, is up there somewhere.
Yep. That's another one.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? Okay.
Get real into Cormac McCarthy books.
Oh, God. So they've got Murph up on the, like, the crow's nest, like, as the lookout. Yep. Calling down to them, and they still don't understand him.
Mm-hmm. Like, all I know is that maybe he could hold the rope. He's got weird rope arms. Maybe he has like an affinity with rope, and Dal could go in the crow's nest because he's good at yelling.
Yeah, all you got to do is look for things and yell down to the other guys, and he's yelling, and they're like, "What did he say? Like, why? Why?" Also, I thought you solved the problem of how to understand him.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. How do you feel about the whole boat sequence?
I thought it was kind of neat. If it had been one episode, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I have to make peace with the fact that Star Trek does boat stuff sometimes, you know? Like,
yeah, that's exactly how
we
got to
do our rich naval tradition.
I get it, but also I'm tired of it. Like, This is a different angle. I will say that it's not the same, like the same thing that they usually do, which is just Moby Dick in space or whatever. Like they did.
Yeah.
No, they were literally having to sail this thing, and the sail looked like a Starfleet insignia. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yep.
Like visually, it was pretty interesting, but it went on for too long.
It's made up of like those solar sail things, but they're using it as like a wind sail. Nah. I thought it was neat, you know, like, it's fine.
And they have to sail across these clouds instead of an actual ocean, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
Although there is, I guess there is an ocean, but, like, you can breathe in it, or it's air, or something. I'm not sure.
No, don't know.
It's full of sandworms. Like
sandworms, hate them. We both have that note.
Yep.
Also, if you fall in the water, you turn into a girl. Wait, no, that's a different thing.
Oh, God, if only.
Been watching a lot of Ranma lately, so.
Yeah, and I, surprising nobody grew up on a lot of Ranma, so.
Is that formative for you in some way?
Weirdly, weirdly indicative back when I was a kid of watching it and going, God, I would never go back.
Mm-hmm.
And then never thinking about that ever again.
I'm just like, that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Let's see.
That show also informed my love of extremely red redheads.
Hi. let's see. What else?
Yeah.
My last
the
note
scene
is,
of two,
and then the, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
The fact that a lot of this episode is based around two guys I can't stand arguing about who owns a starship that Starfleet owns is really, like... That kind of sums up most of my issues with these two episodes.
That every now and then, like if Amanda or Tila or both of them are watching it with me, I'll read one of your better notes to them. And that was the one that I like. That's an excellent point.
Aw.
Because, yeah, they
that makes me weirdly really happy.
They spend a good chunk of the episode like Dal's like our ship. And he's like, no, it's my ship. And as you correctly point out, it belongs to the government.
Yeah. It's neither of your ship. I've been camping in it for 10 years. Yeah, well, I rode it around for 2 years. None of you get to keep it.
I think Chakotay thinks he's got squatter's rights.
Yeah. If anyone's going to end up with it, it's Geordi. It's Geordi's ship. It's going to go to Geordi's museum.
Yeah, so you're saying this belongs in a museum?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, no,
I don't
follow
that up with so do you, because I don't think you do, Al.
Well, thank you. Yeah. My last note for this is, and then the two worst characters got eaten by eels. So that kind of tracks with what you're saying.
Yeah, if only.
Mm-hmm. No, and as you said, just throw Murph in there, too.
Yeah, if only Murph could try to save them with his ropes. Oh, God.
Yep.
How I hate him.
Yeah, it's not great. All right. Anything else? These episodes run short when we do these two-parters like this.
Yeah, let me see here.
I thought with Chakotay they were trying to do a Luke from Last Jedi thing, which I know
Definitely.
That movie didn't make it up. That's just a good example of that, but that like they were riffing on old stuff from mythology from forever ago.
Oh, yeah.
Just the hero that's decided he's got to like be in, you know, isolation now, like in exile. That's the word I was looking for.
No, I kept waiting for him to like... Throw their phaser over his shoulder and like take a big swig of green milk.
Mm-hmm. Go milk a crunchberry.
Go milk a milk beast.
Mm-hmm. A moof milker.
A moof milk. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Milk this moof.
All right. Anything else?
I think that's it.
Very well. It's all for me as well. So that's it. Like we said, four more episodes. So if you want to write to us, postatomichorror@gmail.com, we'll be doing a supplemental soon. We also, I need to open talks with the Gavs, but I'm sure we're going to be doing one of our holiday crossovers. So, look forward to that at the end of the year. If you want, bonus material like this show many, many weeks in advance and, new Nick and Willikins and some other stuff, patreon.com/Algar, you can pledge as little as a buck. It's great. Next time, we are covering probably the best/worst title of the series, triple called Quest, which I kind of love and hate at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And also one called Cracked Mirror, which, oh no.
Oh no, please God, no.
I thought we were safe from that, but Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong, but I bet not.
Uh-huh.
I bet it's that. Ugh.
Maybe it's just about Jenko Pog breaking a mirror. That would be fine.
Mm-hmm. I think Brian will be joining us for those. I got to double check.
Oh, good.
I'm pretty sure. Really, Brian has a lot on his plate these days, so it's possible we have to reschedule. But I think he'll be joining us for that. So look forward to that. And I think that's all for this time.
Yeah. See you, folks.
The Post-Atomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2025. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.